Time is 8:40. Luba Mayakiso joining us on the line. Luba Mayakiso, how are you?
Very well, Howard. How are you guys?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. We're going to, we've been all over the show in terms of conversations, but the one thing I want to bring it back to now is our impressions on the cabinet appointments last evening. What is your impression of Cyril Ramaphosa's choices?
He promised a much smaller, leaner cabinet, and he's brought it down to 28, but, a lot of deputies. There's still 34 deputies. Jacob Zuma had 37 deputies. Thabo Mbeki had 26. Nelson Mandela had 14. So what's happened is rationalizes, it brought some departments together, but then it's created two deputies in a lot of these departments, and I can't figure out why. So yes, in pure rand terms, you save on having the actual ministers, but you've kept the deputies, and they'll probably, still keep some of those ministries. So from that point of view, I think it's not as lean as I expected it to be. And then there are some issues that still puzzle me that go beyond his presidency. So you have, for instance, the minister in the presidency, and then the minister in the presidency for women, youth and persons with disabilities. Now, I'm not quite sure. You could have had a minister in the presidency and taken the issue of women, youth and disability and said to each department, part of your, of what you've got to do is deal with those issues, but not create a separate position for it. So you kind of get the feeling that some people had to be kept there. And my third comment is that, there's some ministers who've been there for, I think, far too long. My complaint with the ANC has always been that there are some people that you get a sense that they're entitled to be there and somehow they can't be removed. You take, for instance, Lindiwe Sisulu, who's been a deputy since 1996. I mean, she's been in cabinet all that long, and she's been human settlements minister from 2014 to 2018. And by all accounts, she made a horrible mess. And now she's going back to it. I mean, she was, moved from it last year, I think, just after Cyril took over. So you've got her sitting around. You've got Angie at basic education since 2009. And by all accounts, that has not really fired very well. But you still have basic education and higher education. And I'm not quite sure why you need two separate ministries. And then you've got Naledi Pandor, who's been around as well since the early 2000s. So there are a lot of people who've just been there for far too long. For instance, the minister, Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula, also been around since, 2004. So there are some people, for some reason, that he seemed unable to move. But I think for me, if I take a step back, what worried me was first there was the postponement, which is not a very good sign. And from people I've spoken to, it seemed like there were consultations right up until the last minute, which should have been done and dusted by Monday. And rumors of people saying even those who didn't make it to the cabinet were not informed. So as bad as Zuma was in his time in shuffling his cabinet, but people would say that at least you got a call, a heads up saying, listen, I'm leaving you out, even if it was, let's say, an hour before the announcement. Whereas here, a lot of those who were left out only found out when they listened to the announcement. But if you look at his body language, you don't get the sense that this is the cabinet that he wanted. You got somebody who was almost, putting on the table the best that he could get, which was not really what he wanted. I mean, I haven't even got to the anti-Pat issue of Patricia de Lille, which came out of the blue and makes no real sense, because, I mean, she's been in the Western Cape as a mayor, hasn't covered herself in glory, started her own party, only got two seats. So you've then got to ask yourself and say, what was the rationale? Perhaps it's a long-term view of saying maybe she can mobilize the Western Cape, but then you have to say, but she's failed to do so. She only got two seats. So it's a puzzling cabinet, Howard. I'd love to say, a breath of fresh air, and this is what...
No, I don't think there's very much fresh air. I think my understanding of it is what it is a cabinet that gives Ramaphosa himself more strength. He's put he's covered the key areas, certainly around fiscus, and some of the key areas with his those that are loyal to him. It's less about the ability to perform, but more about giving him the ability to perform. That's the way in which I see it. What's your thoughts on Naledi Pandor? Because she's obviously taking a she's taking the international stage. Lindiwe Sisulu certainly didn't cover herself in glory either. With and it's, I'm not even talking only about the Israel story, but just the whole international approach that is very, very anachronistic and out of step with liberal thinking around the world. What do we expect from Naledi Pandor?
I think you'll get probably a more seasoned person, you know, in that portfolio, because everybody who you listen to will tell you that Lindiwe Sisulu made a total hash of it, and I think she actually angered and really damaged relationships with many countries. So she's got a tough role to try and restore that credibility, and I think she is seasoned enough and is probably less aggressive in how she's going to approach it. On the issue of Israel, it's going to be a tough one. I think she won't be as aggressive, because I'm not quite sure what drove Lindiwe's views on the issue. Lady Pandor should be, I think, a bit more moderate. But if you look at some of her last, you know, how she's lent on the issue and statements she's made, she's certainly not a friend of Israel, let's put it that way.
No, she was the first time that we heard about the downgrade. It actually came from her, and she certainly is somebody that endorses it. So, so I don't think we should expect a change in policy, but I do think I agree with you that we might see a little bit more balance, because I think it might come more from an intellectual, my sense is that she might be somebody that one could have an argument with and disagree on the issues without it being a personal vendetta or drive. That's the sense that I get, is that she'd be somebody that you could intellectually debate on many of these issues.
You see, the issue has been in the past, going back to, let's say, even the Zuma and the Thabo Mbeki administration. You often had deputies who, I mean, I don't want to be unkind now, but who were Muslim, who took a very anti-Israel view. Now, the challenge we have here is that her husband is Muslim and she's converted. So that does, for me, raise a red flag, but it doesn't necessarily write her off. But there have been students who've gone to Israel, and I think one of the two kids who went was either one of the kids or a relative. But it seemed in the family that at least somebody pretty close to her was able to take a trip, I think, with Safi and go to Israel. So for me, that was interesting, because didn't get fallout afterwards.
I just want to read you a quote of hers, and she says, "It's a very she spoke last year at one of the temples in Greenpoint, and she said, it's a very interesting moment. I'm a Muslim South African in a synagogue in a temple who has just made the Jewish Board of Deputies very angry with her. They have written to me to say on behalf of all South African Jew community, which I don't quite believe. Nevertheless, I am recipient of such a letter." So what we're seeing by this, okay, obviously the only part here that bothers me is the fact that she's sort of able to disassociate the Jewish Board of Deputies from Jews, and she's saying, oh well, you don't represent all Jews. That's a part of it that bothers me, but the rest is the fact that she recognizes that she's a Muslim South Africa talking at a temple to Jews. You know, one doesn't get the sense that there's, you know, and she might have strong views on Israel, and those views might be very different to my views on Israel, and she's fully entitled to those views, as long as we could have rational, constructive discussions that that still might end in the same way, with her supporting a downgrade and me thinking it's a poor idea. But that's okay, as long as it doesn't come from a place of emotion, anger, and hatred, irrational hatred, for example, you know, towards the Jewish state. And my sense is that it doesn't.
I think that's correct, and I think I would have to say, maybe to temper her comments, that those were made at a time when there was probably a lot of jockeying around for positions, where we you know, MPs, ministers, and NEC members were trying to put themselves in the running for higher office. So I would probably guess, because she's been generally silent on the issue until she suddenly came up there. But here's the thing that for me, I found very interesting, you know, if we can just move away from that for a second. Cyril appointed, he took people from Luthuli House, Fikile Mbalula and Zizi Kodwa, and he put them in, one as Minister of Transport and the other one as a deputy. Now, for me, that's bizarre because by all accounts, you've got Ace as the Secretary General. So if anything is true, it's that Cyril has not got a very friendly Luthuli House towards him, you know, as president. And one would have thought that he would want to keep Luthuli House, strong, at least those who were his strongest supporters, to keep them there to neutralize. Because remember, you had Didi Mabuza potentially going back to Luthuli House, and people were saying he's angling for, you know, the next election, and he wants to consolidate power in Luthuli House, and there's no power in government. So for Cyril to go and take Fikile was heading up elections and take Zizi and put them there, he's rewarded them and, let's say, strengthened cabinet, but he has weakened his hand at Luthuli House, I think, quite tremendously, because then he has very few friends. Because remember now, you're going to have people like Matabile, you're going to have all those who were implicated, who are not, who did not take up the positions of being MPs, who will default back to Luthuli, and none of those are his supporters. So for me, that's the strange one, is he's almost drained Luthuli of his strongest supporters and put them in cabinet, which is not where he needed them. So yes, in terms of cabinet, that looks fine. But in terms of him being able to make sure that he's not being confronted by the ANC and he has not got a hostile ANC, because we've heard rumors, for instance, about Lindiwe Sisulu and others who've been thinking of, you know, trying to get, you know, literally have him unseated before even the next ANC election. So there's a lot of speculation as to other people who are angling for his position and the fact that he has enemies there. I would have thought that he would want to keep his hand very strong in Luthuli with people who are in his camp, who will aggressively champion his cause as opposed to just, you know, take them out.
Absolutely fascinating. Time is 8:52. Lubomani Kisa, thank you as always for your incredible insight into the world of politics, South Africa and everything else. It is 8:52.